This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Peter Worf to MSU Today. Peter is still the relatively new radio station manager at WKAR, MSU's public radio outlet. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ. I've really been looking forward to this. It's been 6 months now, but I've been having fun, so time flies.
I'm glad to hear it. And start by telling us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I came here from Chicago, where I was at two radio stations in the previous 12 years. The first was Chicago Public Radio, WBEZ, where I produced a local news and arts and cultural daily radio magazine. So we'll talk more about that later, I'm sure, as we get to the topic of KAR's current state. And then more recently, I was manager of WFMT, the classical commercial station, one of only two commercial classical stations remaining in the country.
And what attracted you to MSU and WKAR?
Well, actually, before Chicago, I was at KBIA, the University of Missouri's NPR station. So I had that experience with the NPR and music station in a major university environment, too. And I really enjoyed that. I did that for nearly 10 years, then moved on to Chicago. But, you know, I always felt like I would return to a university station. And I always kind of thought I would come home. So here I am back in Michigan, KAR and MSU, just were like a dream come true for me.
And Peter, with smartphones, and we've all got computers, and the whole digital world we're in, what kind of is the state of terrestrial radio, it's called, for most people, maybe over-the-air traditional radio, as there's so much competition for our attention to? What's kind of the state of this beloved medium?
Well, I think as we were speaking a little bit before this interview, you sort of have to be everywhere all the time. You know, when we go out and capture interviews for Current State or for our local news coverage on the NPR programs, or even during our classical programming, everybody brings a camera, too. I mean, we're expected to provide, multi-platform content for people who are using KAR. They want to see what it looks like. They want to see what we're doing. They want video. They check in with slideshows that we create when we're talking about a place or a person or an event.
You find increasingly then that is the audience migrating more towards WKAR.org than WKAR on the air? Or is it still a mix?
It's a mix. You know, radio listening is not a huge growth area. We're strong. I think public radio has remained strong. We have exclusive content via NPR. And here in mid-Michigan, speaking to terrestrial radio, KAR sort of owns that classical music piece. And then we have local programs like Sports Talk and others that are exclusive and local to 870 AM. So those audiences on AM 870 and 90.5 FM have remained strong relatively over the last 5 years or so. Of course, we're membership organizations too, so that's a measure of our audience. And people are very good and very generous to us, and we appreciate that. But we're seeing tremendous growth, especially over the last year, in seeing how many people are using KAR.org, looking at content, watching slideshows, seeing video, exploring everything that we have there that's in addition to our AM and FM stations. And honestly, our Facebook reach has increased tremendously, very steadily over our one sort of main page. And on our 90.5 classical page, basically doubled our reach in the last 6 months. So
it's not really that people are leaving listening on the air, but you're gaining new people through the internet.
I think everyone in their use of media is just using more and more things. We're turning to more and more places. I mean, that's what everybody does.
Well, tell me a little bit more. Peter Worf, my guest on MSU Today, the manager of WKAR Radio at Michigan State. Where do you want to take the station, and sort of what are your plans now that you've been here for a while to keep it relevant.
Well, Gary Reed is the director of broadcasting of both KAR Radio and KAR TV. Susie Elkins is my counterpart at the TV station. She's the station manager. And all of us want to work together at expanding local programming. We need to sound like, to look like this place, to look like MSU, to look like the Lansing area and mid-Michigan, and really sort of the greater Great Lakes area as well, exploring what's happening at the Capitol and everything between the lakes. We need to do more of that if we're to survive in a public broadcasting environment that is often threatened by the loss of funding sources. We can't just simply play CDs or turn the network news key for a few hours each day. We need to be creating new local programs like Current State, like What's New on WKAR. That's our local new release program that focuses very much in every program on local performers, local arts. We're looking at opportunities where we can collaborate with KAR TV. One idea that we've talked about may be a music quiz busters with Matt Ottinger. I think he's enthusiastic about that. I know Susie and Gary and I are. I think that would be a lot of fun, too.
We'll talk more about Current State, which is the new one-hour, 7 days a week
right.
program. Tell us what that is, what you want listeners to know.
This was another idea that Gary had wanted to create since before he came to KAR a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. And it's just the right program at the right time. As I also said earlier, you're seeing other stations around the country develop a local news and arts magazine, a program that is almost required listening for people who are curious and caring about where we live. So you put together the planning that Gary and I have done over the last 6 months and more. A tremendous producer, also from Chicago. I didn't know him when I was there. Joe Lindstroth also came from BEZ in Chicago, Chicago Public Radio. And then a guy who was so plugged in to what's happening locally and a tremendous broadcaster, Mark Bayshore. He's our host. And really, I was almost shocked at how quickly the show got off the ground about a month ago. You know, you sort of expect your bugs and your
sure.
sort of shakedown period, your shakedown cruise. And, you know, we had that and we're having that. But my gosh, I thought we got that thing off the ground to 10,000 feet pretty fast.
Agreed. Now, what about the role for classical music? You're trained in it yourself, a big fan of it. That's another one of your new programs. Some stations have just given up on it completely. Is there going to remain a role for the classical programming on KAR?
There definitely is. We have a very loyal classical listenership, a long and loyal one. The classical music at KAR has been in place pretty much since our existence. And over the last decade to 15 years, you've seen more and more broadcasters dropping out of that classical music model, or even that sort of block format, that sort of mixed format model of news and classical music. But there are those out there who've succeeded. I think KAR is succeeding with it, and that we will. And it's about focusing on local programming. We've just developed the new MSU Faculty Recital Series with 5 concerts this academic year. I think that brings an excitement, an immediacy, a locality, an exclusiveness to our content. Just last week, we had the MSU Symphony Orchestra with Kevin Noe conducting a Beethoven symphony and John Adams' Harmony Lara. So you had some classic standard repertoire, and then music of the 20th, 21st century. It was incredibly exciting. Jody Knoll hosted that in such a relevant, immediate way. And, you know, it sounded like us. Nobody else had that. You can go listen to classical music anywhere. That's on Pandora now. You can go to your CDs or any other classical radio station on the web and hear a lot of great stuff. So we have to be about us.
Good point. That goes back to what we were talking about before. There's Pandora is another one of the many options out there for people. So remaining local and relevant to your audience is really, it's always been important, but I guess going forward in this digital age is going to be even more important.
You know, the other thing, speaking to classical music, Pandora, of course, started off with a more sort of pop and you know, popular rock and country and broader model of more popular music, non-classical music. But then they moved into the classical music area and succeeded. But you won't find a live symphony concert from MSU. You won't hear the Lansing Symphony, the Jackson Symphony, things that are about how we sound.
And it's about local and staying relevant to your community, which is even more important. Peter Worf is my guest on MSU Today. He's the radio station manager at the venerable WKAR at Michigan State University. And if that name sounds a little bit familiar to some of you slightly older listeners, Peter is indeed the son of Mike Worf, one of the most famous and recognizable names in the history of radio in the state of Michigan. And I had the pleasure of working with a little bit at WJR towards the end of his career. But talk a little bit. I'm assuming your dad influenced how you got even a love for radio yourself.
Well, how could you not be influenced by a guy who had a radio station in the basement? Well, I should say a radio studio, who took me to the Fisher Building every, few weeks on a day off from school or during the summer to hang out on the 21st floor and see J.P. McCarthy and Carl Haas and, bug the guys in the newsroom and, all the secretaries and, throw paper airplanes down onto Grand Avenue and explore that amazing record collection that they had for so many, many years. Yeah, that was a huge influence on me.
Because your pieces to me even sound a lot like your dad. So I guess a lot of it just comes through osmosis, maybe.
Well, thanks for saying that. I think about a show that's very popular on public radio right now. Probably the most popular radio show since Garrison Keillor and, Prairie Home Companion 20, 25 years ago. You take a guy like Ira Glass and the amazing This American Life, a person who tells stories about the famous, the infamous, and the unknown through excellent writing, narrative, music, archival sound, personal interview. Everything old is new again, right? I mean, that's what my dad did.
He's a trailblazer and he was ahead of his time at the same time, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Just update people on what he's doing, happily enjoying retirement, I would assume?
Well, no. He's happy, but...
he wrote a book recently, at least one.
He actually just finished a second book about American popular song composers, and their book's based on these personal interviews that he did back in the mid-70s in New York and Los Angeles with guys like Harold Arlen, Sammy Kahn, Sondheim, I think, was one of the interviews, Johnny Mercer. I mean, famous songwriters of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. From Broadway, from the movies, and just popular songs that people listen to on the radio, during the war years. It's amazing what this guy was into, my dad, over his career. And then he found these tapes a few years ago that he had featured on Kaleidoscope and thought, wow, these are pretty good. I should make them into a book. And they actually became two books published by McFarland out of North Carolina. And they're available now. American Popular Song Composers and American Popular Song Lyricists, two books.
Well, Peter Worf, as we wrap up, just summarize what you'd like those joining in on our conversation to know again about WKAR and where you want to take it.
Well, there are many new things happening, both in our news and information area and in our classical music. And I hope that listeners will stay in touch and let us know what they think and let us know what they'd like to hear. But We're growing, we're creating new things, and we're staying local.
And you can sample WKAR on the FM dial at 90.5, on the AM dial at 870, and these days online at WKAR.org. Peter, thanks for joining me on MSU Today.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was WKAR radio station manager Peter Worf. For more, please visit WKAR.org. Up next, Michigan DNR leader Keith Cray.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have Keith Cray, Director of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, back on the program. Keith, we do an annual visit, do an update on what's going on down at the DNR, and you've been really quite busy lately. You've been in the governor's message on energy and the environment. You've been in the governor's budget message. Let's talk budget first of all. The governor mentioned conservation funding as a major priority. Give us an update on what he's thinking and where we're going with that.
Sure. First, Kurt, it's a pleasure to be here. It's always good to be on your show, so thanks for the opportunity. And as you know, I've talked in the past about natural resources and how important that is for the future of Michigan. You know, as we compete for young talent, it'll be around natural resources. So the governor's budget really put natural resources front and center. There's a number of things that he's talking about infrastructure and making sure we're taking care of citizens of the state. But part of that that message was conservation funding. So a couple things. One is, first, the governor did propose a supplement for emergency dredging of the Great Lakes. All-time lows. Many of your listeners down Lake Erie, 21 inches lower than last year. 16 inches lower in Lake St. Clair, Lake Huron, Lake Michigan. We have to make sure that boaters can get in and out and that we protect that industry and make sure we're driving regional economy. So there is a supplemental. We're asking our friends in the legislature to move that quickly so that we can work with those communities. There's a Safe Harbor Refuge program in this state that basically says a boater shouldn't be more than 15 miles from a safe harbor of refuge. Mm-hmm. So we need to do that. We need to make sure that we can take advantage of Great Lakes fisheries and also that great fisheries in Lake Erie and in the Detroit River and all those things we've talked about in the past. So that's first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, the governor did put general fund into our budget to talk about aquatic invasive species. You know, we talk about Asian carp. We need to be vigilant. Mm-hmm. And so we appreciate the governor recognizing that. Third is, all our users need to have a safe experience. And so he put money in for a new school of conservation officers. Our ranks are depleted. I have a couple counties where we don't have conservation officers. And, you know, COs are our brand. Mm-hmm. So we need to see COs in the woods helping the old sportsmen and women of this state. So mm-hmm. So that's a great start. He also put some money in for the summer youth employment. And we've talked about that in the past where we have some at-risk kids that are actually doing great work on the ground and helping the natural resources and also building their skills over time. So that's a great effort there. And there was money put in for Belle Isle. You know, Belle Isle's off the table at this point in time, but the governor had fulfilled his commitment should we have had the opportunity to help manage Belle Isle. So we'll kind of move that ahead. But fundamentally, our budget's based upon license fees.
Right.
And so the department got a little complicated. We had 227 licenses, and it seems that's a few too many even for the bureaucracy. So we've streamlined and restructured our license fee package, and we appreciate that being in the governor's message. We've worked with our stakeholders, and that'll actually generate some more, some additional revenues. It's outcome-based so that our users have told us a couple things. One is we need to do some habitat improvement. So that's what the money will go for, is habitat improvement both on the land and in the water. Need to do creel surveys so we know what the fishing numbers are in this state. So we'll pay some attention to that. Three is conservation officers. So that'll also help that. And it'll help us do some high-end, I'll say, work in some of our hatcheries and some of our world-class fisheries. don't know if you know, but we're the number one fly fishing destination state named by
right?
Field and Stream. Yeah, it's a great
I know there
state.
Are a lot of passionate fly fishermen in the state of Michigan, but I didn't know we were number one.
Yeah, we were named number one, so get out and
over Colorado
resources.
And some of those other places.
Exactly
huh?
right. They're looking up now.
That's you raised a lot of topics there, Keith, but let's go back to the dredging one just for a minute, and then I'd like to come back to the licensing. But are there targeted harbors that are going to be dredged yet? Have priorities been identified? How will that actually get underway, and how's that going to affect boaters with the season coming up here this summer?
Well, first and foremost, the message is we're open for business.
Good.
And so if you want to come to Michigan boating this spring, you'll be able to get in and out. There's 83 harbors around the Great Lakes. We surveyed them all. We actually did in-depth work with our friends at the Office of Great Lakes, John Allen.
John on this program.
And you've had Dan Wyant, Director of DEQ, on this. So we're going to expedite permits. We're going to cooperate with private marinas to make sure that when the dredge is there, they can have access to that. And so we actually did the survey. We know how many cubic yards need to be removed for ingress and egress into those harbors. And that's how the governor came up with a $21.5 million program. Now, we do need to have some help with our congressional delegation. Mm-hmm. There is money set aside in our federal budget, and this is not just a state problem. This is a Great Lakes problem.
Is there Great Lakes restoration money that can be used to supplement the state money?
Not so much Great Lakes restoration. It's really the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund that is allocated, dedicated restricted revenue to do dredging that's tied up in Congress. And the governor says it'd be nice if Congress actually paid attention to budget, resolved this sequestration issue, and then actually freed up money for the intent and purpose that it was charged against.
And what better purpose than making sure that our Great Lakes are accessible for our boaters come springtime?
Oh, absolutely. And I also have to say for our fish, you know, I had to do an emergency order on the Betsy because fish couldn't get upstream.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable.
Wow. Yeah, and it's not just the Great Lakes. I mean, we've got water levels on our inland lakes and streams as well. I mean, those are issues that are not just unique to the Great Lakes.
Right. So the dredging program was prioritized. There's one that was health and safety to get people off the lake. Second was the high-value recreation ports. Mm-hmm. And then the third were kind of that high-use inland boat launches because the majority of the boats in this state are trailered and are launched off trailers and not in the marinas.
I'm talking with Keith Cray, our annual visit, and maybe semi-annual with all the stuff you've got going these days at the DNR. The DNR is in the news big time. Keith is the director of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Keith, we're talking about licensing, and you're consolidating licenses, and you're consolidating, you're streamlining the process. How is the restructuring of the licensing going to affect folks directly who purchase them?
Well, the proposal at this point in time, let's start with fishing first. So we had a number of different fishing licenses and charges. And so the proposal is basically $25 fishing license, go fish. And we will have a one-day license for $15 for charter boat captains and then a $75 out of state. So there's three licenses, and really it's go fish. That'll actually generate about $5 million. And so with that, our proposal is put $1 million to put high-end researchers and biologists in the streams to protect that world-class fisheries. Many of your listeners know we have the largest freshwater fish portfolio in the world. Not in the country,
in the world.
Wow. Here it is. Mm-hmm. So we need to pay attention to that. We'll put $1 million into our hatcheries, so we're making sure that we're paying attention to fish numbers. We'll put $2 million into habitat improvement with our partners. That's a grant program out to our partners. And then there is another $1 million that we'll pay attention with hatcheries and creel surveys and those types of things. So that's fishing. So for hunting, we'd like to consolidate it. Oh, and I'd say for our senior friends out there, we will maintain the 60% senior discount. So that's a good thing.
And that affects me directly.
Yes. Well, that's the reason we did it, Kirk.
Right. I know. We're on record.
and then for our hunting, it's the philosophy is a base license for $10. And that'll get you waterfowl, migratory birds, and upland birds, and all small game. So that's actually a reduction from $15 to $10. So that's a direct license reduction. And then after that, it's an add-on type situation. So if you want to shoot deer, then it's a $20 deer license. Doesn't matter if it's antlered or antlerless. So and for those that used to have the old combo tag, it'd be a $10 base and $20 per deer, so it'd be $50. Mm-hmm. And once again, each one of those would still be discounted for our seniors at 60%. Mm-hmm. It's $15 for a turkey, $15 for trapping, and for draw species like bear, It's $25 for elk. It's $100, $5 application fee. So it's
those are pretty reasonable prices by any standard.
if you look at our licensing packages, we were number 50 in the country for what it costs to shoot a deer. Our licenses have not been raised since 1997. The buying power of that dollar has been eroded 44.7%. But the real issue is, let's not look backwards, let's look forward. What would you do if the sportsmen and women in this state are willing to invest in us? So if we want to do pheasant restoration initiatives, I talked about that before on the program, we want to repurpose 2,000 acres of state land. This will allow us to do that. Maybe we can put some pheasants back on the landscape so we can enjoy those hunting days of the late 60s, early 70s.
And then, of course, you've got the passport to get into the state parks, and that's been a really successful program. And that really was a reduction as well.
That's exactly right. It was a reduction, and as I've said before, you know, we had about 27% participation. 18% was our break even, so we've been able to pay attention
amazing.
To the state parks, and that's a great story. I'd sure encourage your listeners to get out and get the rec passport, to get into a state park, state boat launch, state access area. For $11, that's a great
deal. And it's so easy to do now. When you re-up in your license plates, you can just get it done.
Right, and we'll try to work with the legislature and our friends at the Secretary of State to say once you've actually gotten into the program, you don't have to remember to check the box every year. We're getting some feedback from the customers just say, no, we like this program. We want to be in it. And then expand that to public land so we can become the trail state and make some of those connections. And so there's a great reason to invest in the public asset in this state.
I'm talking with Keith Cray, who's the director of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Keith, you mentioned a lot of critters. You mentioned turkey. You mentioned deer. Let's talk a little bit about wolves. There might be a fee for wolf hunting down the trail, but that's still in process, right? We don't have a wolf hunt at this time.
We do not. What happened is that first we knew this day would come, and there has been a thoughtful plan put out by the Wolf Forum, and that was comprised of everyone from those that wanted to watch wolves to those that wanted to hunt wolves. It was scientifically based. The tribes were involved because wolves have a special spot in tribal nature. And so there's a plan. And the plan basically said that you need to know how many wolves you have. You need to look at the lethal and non-lethal interventions, and those are happening. We shot 8 wolves in Ironwood.
Mm.
There are problems. There are wolves killing livestock.
They're hitting livestock, right?
And
dogs,
on farms,
pets.
In Michigan. You're exactly right. And so to be thoughtful, to engage the tribes in a government-to-government consultation, to do public hearings, and go back to the Wolf Forum. And so we're disappointed that HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, came in and is collecting signatures to do a ballot referenda, because this really is about scientific game management. In 1996, the citizens of this state said, we need to do scientific game management. 69% of us said that. So to be premature in doing a ballot referenda to say we shouldn't use hunters as a solution and a targeted solution, I think is ill-advised.
And it's ignoring, back to your point, the scientific data.
That's exactly right.
Which undergirds a lot of all of the wildlife management that you folks are doing.
Yeah, the North American wildlife model has never failed in this country. Not once, nowhere, no how, across this country. So why would we think it would fail now? So to shoot wolves where they're nuisance without that type of a thought process, I'm perplexed why we would want to do that.
Let's come back to water. Water is huge. I don't need to tell you that. You're doing a lot of projects. We talked about the dredging. We talked a little bit about invasives. But some of the water initiatives, one that's in the news that's been talked about is restoring the rapids in Grand Rapids. Maybe talk about a couple of the major water initiatives underway with the DNR.
Sure. Many of the water initiatives we're able to do is because of Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund. And as you know, that actually started when we had a non-renewable resource, oil and gas, and we took money that we made from that, put it into a fund to invest in recreation around this state. So Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund has just been a great opportunity for us. And so through community projects like putting the rapids back in Grand Rapids, we can actually talk about taking out 4 dams, doing some sturgeon spawning so we can put sturgeon back in. We can increase the fishing experience for those that have fished at the base of the 6th Street Dam. That's a little bit tough to wade. And we can put boulders in. We can do some kayaking.
Sounds like you've been there.
I have been. And we can actually cooperate with the city of Grand Rapids, and the mayor's been a great partner in this. So, and we're trying to figure out what's the right management construct, what's the right, should we have some state ownership there, should we do some purchases through the trust fund, but we can do some development of that river with a couple of different state funding mechanisms.
I mean, what greater resource does Michigan have? I mean, we have a lot of great ones, but our freshwater.
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, if you look at 36,000 miles of river in this street, in this state, 20,000 miles of trout stream, and as I mentioned, you know, that's one reason why people stay here, why they recreate here. And if you look at hunting and fishing, that's a big reason we're here.
Keith, we haven't heard a whole lot about invasive species lately, and I know this is a multi-agency issue. It's federal, it's state. You folks are certainly involved. Where are we right now with the Attorney General's office, et cetera, on the whole Asian carp issue?
Well, certainly Bill Schuette's done a great job as Attorney General supporting any type of legal remedies for aquatic invasive species and Asian carp very specifically. So we work closely with them. You know, there's always that illegal trade in Asian carp, and so we pay attention to that. Two is the governor does chair the Great Lakes Governor's Coalition, if you will. And as co-chair of that, he's actually having a meeting of all his counterparts in June. So that might be a good topic to cover.
Absolutely.
Because one of that will be aquatic invasive species. We are paying attention to ballast water. We got to make sure that we're not having artificial introduction of those species into the Great Lakes. And then three or four, as I mentioned, the governor did put some money into our budget. He put over $2 million in there, one for a high-end research vessel. And then the other one is $150,000, so we can pay more attention to that. So we do have a plan, but it's a limited plan. We need to work with those other states around the Great Lakes to make sure they're doing what we're doing.
I've been talking with Keith Cray, who is the director of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, an old friend, and also, besides all the hunting and fishing he does, a big basketball fan.
Hi, I got to say, go green.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
The best reason to become a certified Spartan by joining the MSU Alumni Association is the network of 500,000 Spartans that are out there that we can connect you with.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
Victory for MSU!
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, we have a 30th anniversary party coming up, celebrating an event that has done a wonderful job of showcasing the very important and very vibrant Michigan equine industry. The event is the 2013 Michigan Horse Expo, and here to tell us all about it is one of the event's founders and member of the Michigan Horse Council's Board of Directors, Ann Louise Budd. Ann Louise, so great to have you on the show. And you've also been in charge, you're in charge of the Horse Expo as well.
Yes, I have been for 30 years.
30 years. Well, tell us a little bit about the Expo, a little of its history, and some of the things you're going to highlight this year.
Well, first of all, this is our third home, the way it is right now. We came about being the way that we are with our expo and everything through the governor's conference on the horse industry back in 1982. And one of the things is that came out of that was the animal initiative and the encouragement to have an area, have a place where we could highlight the horse industry. And we started out at the Civic Arena, downtown Lansing. All the horses were in the basement. That's Constitution Hall now. Then we moved for 2 years over to the Lansing Center, and we had the inauguration of the pavilion in 97.
Yeah, and that beautiful pavilion on the campus of Michigan State University. And the development of that pavilion was a direct result of that animal initiative, and I think we probably have to give Governor John Engler a lot of credit for that.
Oh, yes. And he was, the other thing that was exciting for us with the horses is that he was there when we dedicated it. And he came in on a wagon and with the pulled by a team of horses, and the whole place was just as packed as could be. It was like, whoa, I really didn't think this was going to happen.
Yeah, and it did happen, and a lot of that was a result of your efforts and those of your friends in the equine industry. Now, the event is March 8th through 10th, so it's coming right up at Michigan State University. You're going to have, well, tell us some of the things you're going to have. You're going to have a lot of stallions there, for one thing.
Yes, well, at 40 stallions, 20 different breeds, and each horse is shown three different times throughout the event. Come out and either ridden or shown in hand, and some will be driven. And so we have that part of it. Then the whole area is full of vendors, and we have everything from nuts to, well, clothing, tractors, trailers, and all kinds of things for the horses. Plus, we have seminars in the arena, in the auditorium, and a seminar room. And Richard Schrake from Oregon will be here this year. And also we will have Double Dan's, Dan Sheets, who will be one of the highlighters. And we have a lot of people from Michigan. One of the people from our local area is Lisa Massman, who is going to be talking about coaching, and she'll be there with Richard. And Paula Hetzel from the horse barns will be there. We're featuring the Friends of the Horse Farms this year, which we've not done before. So we're real tickled about that part of the program. And for the people that are interested in trail riding, we have a trails room. We're usually about 20 different trails organizations are there giving out information and talking to the people about the friends of their particular area.
Yeah, speaking of trail riding, Ann Louise, and that's a subject I was going to get to later, but since you brought it up, we recently were talking with DNR Director Keith Cray, and apparently your industry, the equine industry, is working with the DNR to establish even more of these trails in some of our state parks.
Yes, we have a real active group of people that meet once a month. We have about 20 different trail organizations in the Michigan Horse Council, and they're friends of the trails in their particular area, and they work real hard to have work days and keep the trails clean and keep them open for multi-use trails, not just for the horses, but for walking and also for the biking. So it's they work real hard with the other populations to make sure that they're secured for everybody.
Ann Louise, you've been at the center of the Michigan equine industry for a long time. You've been a leader in that industry. For our listeners who may not be aware, but talk a little bit about the importance of the horse industry to the state of Michigan.
Well, it's a billion-dollar industry, and they have thousands of people that are involved in it. If you think about it, for one horse, you have the owner, you have to have fencing, you have to have a barn, you have to have the feed for it, you have to have the hay, the grain, and you have to have clothing to wear. You know, you can wear your blue jeans and boots. But if you are in the show industry part of it or in the racing industry, you have to have the clothing for it. So it's very multifaceted. And think about this. When you're driving down the road, as you or I would be driving, and you see those horses and big horse trailers going down to the horse shows or on the trails, that's a huge, huge industry that people don't even think about with the periphery, just going all the way out to include everything. This year has been real hard on the horse industry, too, because of the drought, and the price of hay has gone sky high.
Yeah, we've talked to some folks about that, along with some other commodities that have gone sky high. But people sometimes don't think about how that lack of hay directly affects. So price per bale goes up, doesn't it, Ann Louise?
It goes way high. Some places they said it's been up to $17 a bale. But, you know, the horse industry is a little bit different than anything else. We were talking about it the other day. When you have a horse, you have an obligation to take care of your animal. And you have the income that you might buy books or whatever, and you put it toward your horse. And as people grow older, they have the emotion involved that many of them had horses as kids, and they didn't have, they got rid of their horses because they went to college and then they had families. And now they're back. They want their horses and they're riding their horses. They either have them at home or they board them. And that's the discretionary income that people take care of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were mentioning when these horse trailers go up and down the highway, you're right in terms of the ripple effect on the economy. You've got all the fuel that they're using. You've got the overnight stays sometimes maybe staying in motels. You've got the restaurants spending that's going on. So just on the road, it's huge.
And if you go to the areas where the state fairs are, the big horse parks, you can't imagine the restaurants, the hotels, all kinds of shops that have been built around them. And if you go down to I-75, you'll especially see that where the Kentucky Horse Park is.
Well, Anna, we've got a couple minutes here, but as you look ahead to 2013 and down the road, what are one or two issues that concern you related to the equine industry? Are there some things that you're really working on right now that we may not be aware of?
Well, one of the things is the racing industry, because hundreds of people have gone out of business and they're racing in different states now rather than here, and that means that would eliminate thousands of people that would be employed in the state. So that's a big concern for the horses and the horse industry. The trails, people are very interested and enthusiastic about that. And one of the things that we are looking forward, the whole ag industry, is to get the outside arena at the pavilion covered, because it will benefit all of agriculture and it will help with the horses. That's one of the busiest places in the state, is the pavilion at Michigan State. And if we have the covered arena outside, they'll be able to come inside, they'll be able to work their animals, horses and llamas and cattle, before they come in and are judged in the big arena or in the pavilion.
Well, speaking of the pavilion, again, it's a great event. I've been there myself. It's the Michigan Horse Expo. It's at the MSU Livestock Pavilion, March 8th through 10th, because it's coming right around the corner. For people who want more information, they can go to MichiganHorseExpo.org on the web, MichiganHorseExpo.org. And I've been talking with Ann Louise Budd, who is chairman of this year's event and also a member of the Michigan Horse Council's Board of Directors. Ann Louise, always great to talk to you. And would like to perhaps get over to the show again this year. It's been a few years since I've been there.
Check it out. Look us up.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan Life. When I first came to Michigan State University in 1973, many of my friends at Ann Arbor Pioneer High School wanted to know why. There was a Big Ten school in my backyard. Both of my parents had earned degrees there. I had been accepted for admission. Why would a potential third-generation Wolverine want to come to East Lansing? My answer? I want to become a Spartan. I now realize that on that first day I set foot on the Michigan State campus, I had no idea of the true meaning of that word. It is only now, with the seasoning of the years, that I am just beginning to understand. Being a Spartan isn't a degree, a t-shirt, a title, or a trophy. It's an ethic, a lifestyle, a set of beliefs and behaviors that set us apart from the rest of the world, even as we work together in pursuit of a better life for everyone. A Spartan is something you choose to become. It is integrity, fairness, morality, honor, generosity, tenacity, kindness, and assurance, elements that combine to forge an iron constitution and a compassionate heart. Therefore, I am a Spartan. I emerge from the most modest of backgrounds and from the most prominent of families. The blood of every race, creed, color, and culture flows green within my veins. My story is uniquely mine,
but I work together with others to become a leader, a lifesaver, and a world changer. I am a Spartan. I read the classics, create art, and study the fundamental laws of the universe. I unlock the secrets of science, create businesses, appreciate the beauty of a symphony, and the power of the written word, reforming the insights from my research into ideas that can change the way of life for people I will never meet. I am a Spartan. I may make three-point shots, swim faster, and run further, but I know that a broad, lifelong educational experience will contribute to my inevitable success on and off the athletic field. I am a Spartan. I contribute at every level, in every community. I feed the world, heal the sick, teach the children, and invent, improve, and envision great ideas that lead to great accomplishment. I am a Spartan. I create drugs, discipline, and doctrine that strengthen the weak, bring hope where there is despair, and prolong the quality and quantity of life for the afflicted until I can find a cure. I am a Spartan. I may not always score the most points, but I am never beaten. I learn from experience, get up when I stumble, and am ultimately victorious in every endeavor I undertake. I am a Spartan. I celebrate differences, knowing that if we can discuss and debate from a place of diversity, we are more likely to make the right decisions when we act as one. I am a Spartan. I have known pain, disappointment, and struggle, but I realize that only the hottest fire refines a Spartan's resolve, and it is both trial and triumph that build character. I may achieve success, but I remain humble because I know that the greatest among us are defined not by our position, but by our kindness, caring, and humility. I am a Spartan. I am among the first to offer a hand to those in need, regardless of who they are or where they come from. When others complain, I seek to understand. When others give up, I go the extra mile. While others may dream of the future, I am committed to creating it. I am a Spartan. I believe that what has happened in the past gives me perspective, but it is where I am going that makes all the difference. I honor those who came before, seek to learn from those who would teach me, and live my life so that Spartans who have passed on will be proud. I am a Spartan. I live the core values of the institution that educated me and devote my time, talent, and treasure to create a margin of excellence that ensures, enriches, and sustains Michigan State University for future generations. I am a Spartan. My dedication to the greater good is unmatched. My determination is unbroken. My compassion is legendary. And the common connection I share with my 500,000 fellow Spartans sustains and strengthens me in everything I do. And when my earthly tale is told, and I look down from the precipice of the ages, other Spartans will stand beside me, just as every Spartan, past, present, and future, will stand beside you. We will pick you up when you stumble, guide you in the direction of goodness, and celebrate the day when you can look into the heavens and truly declare, I am a Spartan. Others may associate these things with their university, their faith, or their chosen profession. That's okay. Those who live the Spartan ethic, though they may never set foot on the Michigan State University campus, are part of the Spartan spirit, even though they may never realize it. If you would endeavor to incorporate these beliefs and behaviors into your life, I promise you that you will find fulfillment in whatever you may decide to do. And whoever you become, there will be a quiet voice within you that will, in its own unique language, someday whisper, I am a Spartan. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about the Spartan life at alumni.msu.edu.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening, and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
Alumni.msu.edu. MSU Ag Bio Research, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
We're the face of MSU across the state with infrastructure and research expertise to address those local problems.
Dr. Steve Pepke leads MSU Ag Bio Research.
MSU Ag Bio Research is the research engine that undergirds the food and agricultural industry in the state.
MSU Ag Bio Research.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.